Hey, last night, our girls, the Matildas, were beaten by Sweden 1-0. As I welcome Mark Bosnich to the show, our all-time favourite. Bozza, good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, look, I'm well because I was working last night, so I didn't get to see it. Tim Watson came in this morning as fired up as I had. He wants to make a submission to the Swedish ambassador
Protest.
That they was borderline cheating last night. What's the story?
He's got a point. He has got a point. Now we're all biased. I think we're all fired up. But it was definitely a touch and go one. But to be fair to the referee, she did blow very early. She obviously saw somebody being blocked, and she did blow very, very early. You know, with VAR, you know,
did she blow too early? Too early.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. With VAR, maybe you would have let it go, but she was adamant. You know, she was absolutely adamant, the referee. I mean, there was a few people internationally on social media who were making the point that when you start that player in that offside position, generally it's to the block the opposition, and then he was making the point, basically, if you start that player like the Matildas did, and you get penalised, then, you know, you shouldn't be surprised. But look, from our point of view, I mean, it was, you know, like I said, from Tim, myself, and all of Australia, we all thought it was a goal, and that would have made a massive difference because it was right before half time.
That was a solid performance by the Matildas against Sweden.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. I don't think a lot of people before the tournament, you know, if you'd said to them we'd get to the semi-finals, they would have gone, okay, we'll take that. And Sweden, for me, have been the outstanding side of the tournament. So I think they can be very, very proud of the fact that they got to the semi-finals. It's the first time that they've got to the semi-finals in an international tournament. We obviously won the Asian Cup before, but in World Cups and Olympics, they've never got that far. And I thought it was a very good, you know, tournament for them. And now looking forward, now they obviously they've got the World Cup coming up in 2023. There's another Asian Cup before that as well, but the big one is the World Cup. And I think that they've shown to themselves that they're not that far off.
Without going into great, great, great detail about the tactics last night, because Gary's eyes will glaze over, what were we doing last night?
I think Tony Gustafsson's done a very good job. Sometimes, you know, in any sport, and you both know that from your own sport as well, you've got to, you know, not sometimes, really, if you want to be successful, you've got to cut your tactics to the players that you have, and especially in international football, there isn't a great deal of time for an international manager to work with those players. So I think, you know, taking those hard matches that he did as preparation to see exactly where we're at, getting beat and risking, you know, ruining the girls' confidence before the Olympics and then doing so well, I actually think he's done a very, very good job. A lot of people were disappointed. They thought that maybe we should have played a different way in terms of you know, when we went 1-0 down. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that caught up with us was the fact that that we run out of gas a little bit. I think if you look at Sweden in the group, because they're already through, I mean, they could rest players against New Zealand. And I think that really told. And I thought that's why I was, you know, so disappointed that goal wasn't allowed. Because I thought whoever had scored first was going to go on and win the way I was looking at the girls and how they were shaping up.
Bozza, I was worried with the long ball style of the Matildas. I thought it isolated Kerr up front horribly.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just that the thing is, you know, Sweden defended very, very deep. Now, when you come up against a team who defends very, very deep, there are certain ways to try to break that down. One of them is to play long balls. One of them is to play shorter balls and spread out and to go through. You know, obviously Australia chose the latter, but I don't think you could really fault the tactics in terms of, you know, the overall spectrum and saying, oh, you know what, it was just the tactics. But they came up against a very, very good team. They were very unfortunate not to go 1-0 up. And like I said, in those big, big games and the tight games, and especially in our sport, it can really go either way.
Hey, Boz, I heard you talking about this the other day, and I found it fascinating. The penalty, most things you say I find fascinating, but the penalty shootout, and you're explaining from a goal, a goalkeeper's perspective, what it was that you were watching from at the person taking the. Can you just explain it again?
Yeah, to simplify things down, from a goalkeeper's perspective, Let's go backwards. Let's start from right before the person takes the penalty. The non-kicking foot usually gives an idea where they're going to put the ball. So the non-kicking foot that they plant down, generally where that's pointing, that's where the ball's going to go. The gap between that non-kicking foot and the ball also tells a story. So it's a right footer coming to the ball, and the gap is quite significant normally, and the foot's pointing, normally it's going to go to the goalkeeper's right from a right footer. If the gap between the non-kicking foot and the ball is very close and it's pointing as well to the goalkeeper's left, normally it goes to your left. The other thing is to look is the run-up. Normally, if they take a curled run-up as a right footer, so if you think you're facing it and they're taking a curled run-up, they usually shoot with the curl. If it's straight, they go usually with the straight. The best of them, but usually the best of them, they can, like I said the other day, they can get to the point where they can actually just look at the goalkeeper and not look at the ball and use their peripheral vision to look at the ball. So it's still in the hands of the shooter, but you can lower the odds as much as you possibly can.
What was your success rate over the journey?
I don't know. There was one year was like, I don't know, everything just went my way. I think it was about 8 or 9 out of 13. That was including a shootout. I was lucky with penalties. Very, very lucky with penalties.
What about the stutter? You got to
have the luck to go the right way, and then your athleticism does come into it. But if you don't go the right way, you can be the most athletic people ever. You're going to let penalties in.
Where's Mark Bosnich, the all-time great? What about the guy who stutters, Bozza, that comes in, he sort of half stutters,
They've changed the rules over that over the years. You've got to have your run continuous now. Right, before right. You could stop and that, but now you can just stop, but you've got to keep your run continuous. Just like they've changed the rules in terms of the goalkeeper has to have at least 1 foot on the line. So they're very difficult as well. But I've always thought that the guy that does, or the lady that does sort of stutter their run, stagger their run, I always think if you can hold yourself, I actually think it actually increases your odds as well. They like, remember, those the ones who take their time, or so they like the goalkeeper to dive out the way so they can put it that side. The longer you hold and the more you can get the penalty taker to put his head down or her head down, the more it starts to swing in your favour. But you've really got to slow it down, just like one of those long-lens cameras, you keep your finger on it. You've got to slow it down like that.
Talking to one of the most knowledgeable, greatest goalkeepers of all time right across the world.
Keep talking.
Hey, were you a champion?
Listen to this, kids.
Were you a champion high jumper when you were at school?
No, I wasn't a champion. I wouldn't say champion. I was more a 100-meter sprinter and long jumper, but I was okay. I couldn't completely master the Throsby flop. I'd do the normal one, you know, the one that was before the Throsby flop, because I had a really good spring. But mine was more long jump than 100-meter sprint.
What time for the 100, Boz, are we talking?
I was under 12 seconds as a kid, yeah.
Jeez.
And then as I got old, yeah, quick, yeah, quick. As I got older, I would have think it was closer to 11, yeah.
You were wasted in the goals.
Well, that's what I keep telling everyone, but you know.
Hey, do we need to start worrying about Ange over there in Scotland?
Look, it's when you're at a big club, like I said, when he first arrived there, you always have to have that little worry in the back of your mind. Because at big clubs, you know, three losses on the trot is like, you know, people start saying things like, oh, you know, he won't last or this, that and the other. But I just think that because of the state that Celtic were in, remember, they were 25 points off the pace last season against Rangers. And there was a lot of anger towards the board in terms of backing him. And because of the COVID situation, obviously the money for all sporting clubs around the world isn't there like it used to be. So I think there's an appreciation that there is. It's a bit of a mess at the moment. But the thing that concerns me is not about Ange himself. I think he will get it right. Is the fact that if the board just turn around and sort of say, okay, to take the pressure off them, that they just turn around and get rid of the manager. Boards have done that before. Now I don't know the Celtic board very, very well. From what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, like I said, they're not in a particularly good place at the moment. They obviously got that Jablonec to qualify for the Europa League. Which is the second tier European. There's the Champions League, which they missed out on, and Jablonec is on. It'll be Friday morning here. That's a big game, really big game, and you know, obviously starting off like they did in the league as well against Hearts, who just got promoted and getting beat, is not going to help their cause. They've got to get players, and he's got a lot of work to do there whether or not that's been said already, that he's been told before he comes that there won't be the funds available to get new players in, we don't know. But I think the most important thing for him, like I said before, is that, you know, it is the result. We know he loves to play a beautiful brand of football, but coming back to what I said originally about the Matildas, if you haven't got the players to do it, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah. If you haven't got the socks, you can't pull them up, Ozzo. I listen all the time. I know you're a Hawthorn man.
Take a break. I'm not happy. I'm not happy with it.
Well, you've got 20 seconds, but give us your thoughts, please.
Well, I'm not happy. I mean, when that originally came, I thought they put Alistair Clarkson in a really difficult position by saying, you know, you're going to basically, you know, sort of take care of the sort of turnover and this, that, and the other. And I just think, as a manager stroke coach who's been the most successful coach in recent times, I think he deserved a lot better. And like I said, I'm not particularly happy. I don't think that was the right way to go. But if you're talking about rebuilding a side and all that, I don't think there was no one better than him to do that. But different strokes for different folks, I guess. But he's been absolutely outstanding. He can hold his head very high, and I hope he keeps on coaching.
Well said.
Well said.
That is a very nice summation of it all, Bozza. Thanks so much for giving us some time, mate. We appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen. Take care.
On you, Bozza.
That's the great Mark Bosnich.